ruby bead, staining the white wood.
I shall ask you a different and much easier question, my brother. I am sure you will know the response, and I shall not have to draw the blade across my eyeball. Are you ready for it?
Yes. Yes, brother, I'm ready.
Why does the porridge bird lay his eggs in the air?
The gnarled hand reached and took up the surgical blade again, bringing it toward the brother's rheumy eyes. Mildred Wyeth was at her own birthday barbecue, and she was 26 years old, which meant it had to be the 17th day of December, 1990. The garden of her home was filled with people that she knew, friends and relatives. Her father beckoned to her from under the shade of a flowering cherry near the picket fence. Her dead father, butchered by the Klan when she was less than a year old. Much later, Mildred had been allowed by her mother to watch the VidNews reports of the killing, a Baptist church south of the Mason-Dixon line, smoldering ashes, smoke rising into the magnolias. For the rest of her life, she couldn't stand the heavy scent of magnolias.
You aren't alive, Daddy.
Her father's hand stretched out to greet her, his face wreathed in a smile, just like in the photo that stood on the upright piano.
I'm fine, my mother. Do I look to be dead?
No. No, Daddy. You look real good.
That's cause I am. I'm afraid you ain't dead.
Doc Tanner was deeply unconscious, mind and body floating in a bizarre limbo, barely connected to each other. His inner eye kept receiving flashes of disparate images, like a child's revolving toy, a saloon on East 40, sawdust on the floor, the unforgettable scent of naphtha flares, beer and nickel cigars, sweat and fresh rain on tweed jackets, pickled eggs and knuckle bones, a rattled whore offering penny bunk-ups, spilled liquor on the metal bar top, fingers on the silver lion's head handle of a cane. But not one of the flickering flames of a memory film would remain long enough for Doc to grasp them. Still, all things considered, it wasn't that bad a jump for the old man. Ryan Cotter was shaving, his face reflected in a polished convex mirror, distorting the room behind him, magnifying so that every pore gaped like a canyon and every hair was like a black cable. The deep scar that ran vertically from the corner of his chillingly pale right eye to the corner of his mouth puckered the top lip so that it looked as though he were always on the verge of smiling. There were deep lines etched around his eyes, nose, and mouth, more furrowing his forehead. Ryan was struck by the resemblance to his father, the late Baron Titus Cotter of the powerful Villa Front Royal up in the Blue Shens. When he'd been a young boy, it had seemed that his father was a stooped old man. Yet Ryan realized, with something of a shock, that he was now older, in his mid-30s, than Titus had been at that time. The straight razor appeared in the bottom of the mirror, moving toward the dark stubble that overlaid his skin. Now there was reflection within the reflection, his face in the steel of the blade, showing again distorted in the polished mirror, reflected again in microscopic miniature back into the razor. He felt himself being drawn into the line of endlessly repeating visions of himself, sucked in so that his brain began to whirl and lose its focus. Faces inside faces. His empty eye, raw, threaded with capillaries, leaked blood into the mirror, onto the razor. Part of himself, the core of his soul, suddenly realized that the process was going to continue until there was nothing left. Nothing that could be called Ryan Cotter. Just the spreading chasms of blackness that lie between the stars. And for Ryan Cotter, it was the worst of jumps. A far place, away to the west, where the ocean and the mountains meet. That was what the old Indian wise woman, Sees All Ways, had told Abe weeks earlier in her tiny, dream-filled home, promising him that the rumors were a possibility. No more than that. Certainly not anywhere close to a probability. She wouldn't tell him that. But the message was enough to give the ex-gunner from Warwag 1 real hope.
It's possible. It's possible that traitors still this side of the Dark River.
He whispered to himself, alone under a blanket near a narrow stream in the high peaks of the Sierras. Abe had been the last one to see the traitor alive, when the legendary leader, ravaged by what everyone assumed was an insatiable cancer, had taken his final solitary walk into the shadows of the forest. But, like Ryan and JB, Abe hadn't necessarily believed that he was gone forever. All three of them had ridden plenty long enough with the traitor to know that you never took anything that he said or did at its face value. Not entirely, not ever.
A man who believes his eyes and ears without raising a question has already got his ticket booked for the last train west.
Twice there'd been clues that had lifted Abe's hopes even further. He'd come across a half-breed with a dog sled 10 days earlier, hauling the results of 6 months trapping, and they'd shared a mutually suspicious night camp, neither trusting the other enough to want to fall asleep. Both men had eventually dropped off from sheer exhaustion. The trapper had heard the stories and had a special interest in them.
I met Traitor once. Shit, he'd never remember nothing fucker like me. But the old bastard sprung up from a Comanche trap out on the Platte River. Came in with his wags like the Almighty and all the angels. Wouldn't recall me, but I heard tales. Yeah, fucking right I did. I met a girl who said she'd been washing dishes in a hash cabin way over east in the greasy grass. Said a man had come in wrapped up, face hid, spoke low, grizzled hair.
Abe had pressed him over the description of the lone stranger.
Did he have a weapon?
Yeah, an old Armalite. She said it looked like he'd been using it as a crutch through a cesspool.
And the stranger hadn't been able to read the menu written up on the wall. The trader had never got around to learning his letters and numbers. The girl also said that a couple of Mech's toughs had given her mouth. The old man had rested his half-smoked cigar on the edge of his plate, stood up, slow like it pained him, and thrown them both through the window. The closed window.
One bled to death. The other ran and never come back. That's the way she told it, friend.
It could have been the traitor. The second clue was less positive. This time, the story wasn't filtered through another person's retelling, and it came from the lips of a dying man. Everyone knew that a dying man would always tell you the gospel truth. Believe that, and you could believe just about anything. Abe had been walking his stolen bay mare along a goat trail in the mountains when he heard a sound that was familiar enough in Deathlands. Someone calling for help.
Help me! Somebody help! I hear you! For the sake of sweet charity, help me! I'm done for!
Charity's something that stoops do for losers!
The trader had never really been all that big on the concept of charity. Then again, Abe could think of dozens of times that the trader had gone against his own inherent cynicism, using the discipline and firepower of the Warwags to come to the aid of the lost, the weak, and the abandoned.
Please! I'm near done!
Abe carried a big stainless steel Colt Python, and he drew the blaster, knotting the reins of his horse over the low branch of a wind-blasted larch.
I'm triple crazy doing this.
As soon as he saw the man, Abe knew that this one wasn't a trick. Nobody destroyed their right leg in a massive rusty bear trap just to try to fool a traveler into helping him. Abe paused, still behind cover, glancing around to make sure that the dying man wasn't just live bait. The river beyond was flowing fast, slicing white over huge boulders that glistened with outcrops of mica. It was a beautiful scene, marred only by the sight of the helpless man, his head turned toward Abe.
I see you! I see you, please!
He was along to Abe's right, 20 yards or so. The trap was bolted to solid rock, with a ring of red iron tethering it by a chain of heavy steel links. The serrated jaws had bitten into the man, just below the knee. Abe walked out into the open, his colt questing before him like the tongue of a snake, tasting the air for any threat of potential danger. Across the river, a pair of red-breasted jays were clattering into the sky. That was enough to reassure Abe. They wouldn't have been there if there had been any other humans in the vicinity. He also noticed a huge muty crow, as big as a white-headed eagle, sitting patiently in a pine tree, waiting for the meal that the dying man offered. The man looked to be in his 30s, with thinning hair, wearing a plaid shirt and jeans. Abe saw first that there was no sign of any kind of weapon.
What happened?
I was camping.